Welcome to the conference call. Now turn the call over to Remington Greg.
Thanks so much, Kira. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to this call where we're going to talk a bit about efforts to immunize businesses from coronavirus-related lawsuits. We have a great lineup of people speaking. I want to thank everyone for calling in, and right now would like to turn to the president of Public Citizen, Robert Weissman.
Thanks, Remington. Thank you all for joining us. I'm going to speak for a few minutes, then Senator Brown will be joining us. After that, Public Citizen colleagues will pitch in. Rick Claypool will review a report that we're just issuing today on corporate irresponsibility in the time of the coronavirus. And then Remington will talk through some of the policy issues and the business demand for immunity for wrongdoing related to coronavirus. And I will pitch in with that as well. I just wanted to give a couple overview comments in advance of Senator Brown joining us. There's a lot we don't yet know about what big business is precisely seeking and what the Republicans will precisely advance when it comes to immunity legislation. There is no formal draft that Mitch McConnell or anybody else has put forward, nor do we know when it's going to happen, but Senator McConnell has made clear that he intends to have it inserted as a red line in the next COVID package, assuming that there is one. Our objective is to make sure that doesn't happen. The reason we don't want it to happen is because the grant of immunity to business for matters related to the coronavirus would be a public health disaster. It would not only deny victims of corporate wrongdoing the ability to get redress and some compensation for harms inflicted, whether they're workers or consumers or patients at nursing homes, it would actually encourage more corporate wrongdoing. It would encourage companies not to take reasonable measures to protect their employees and consumers and patients. It is an anti-public health initiative at the time that we need to be promoting public health. We know already that companies, in a period when they are subject to liability of some modest kinds, are in too many instances engaging in irresponsible activity, as Rick Claypool is going to detail after Senator Brown speaks. The failure to have private remedy for corporate wrongdoing, a private system of deterrence, is made worse by the fact that the federal government is failing utterly to provide regulatory guidance and regulatory enforcement as relates to safety and the coronavirus. The CDC's guidance is minimal, and that's generous in terms of giving employers and workplaces and retailers clear standards for how they should move forward in the coronavirus period. And we know the enforcement agencies are doing nothing, so that OSHA has issued perhaps a single citation despite receiving tens of thousands of complaints of wrongdoing related to coronavirus. The proposal for immunity is being couched as helping make the economy work, but it has nothing to do with that worthy objective. In fact, it would be counterproductive to that objective. What it's really about is the long-term effort by big business and the Chamber of Commerce to win immunity for wrongdoing, to escape the possibility of being held accountable for injuring and endangering workers and consumers across the country when they engage in misconduct. If we want the economy to reopen sustainably, if we want to have the economy rebound, which we all do, the baseline is there have to be assurances of safety for employees and especially for consumers. People are not going to reengage in the economy if they don't feel safe. They're not going to be able to do that, and the economy is not going to be able to grow back to where it was without those assurances. But those assurances won't happen if the public knows that companies can behave irresponsibly and not be held accountable for doing so. So it's of utmost importance that we defeat the proposals that are going to be put forward for business immunity. And we are very grateful to have now joining us a leader in the Senate to make sure that we don't make such a wrong move the great champion from the state of Ohio, Senator Sherrod Brown. Senator Brown, if you have a few minutes, we'd love to hear from you.
I do. Thank you, Rob, and thank you for your work. And Rob got his start in Ohio, so I'm proud of him and the work he does. And I think his comments said it all. Yesterday, the Department of Labor secretary testified in front of our committee, in front of the Finance Committee, and he said under question, he didn't really want to tell us this, but they've got 5,000 OSHA complaints, 5,000, and I think the number's higher than that by now. That's all I'd admit to, and they've issued a total of one citation. They're not getting the direction. They have no interest in enforcing worker safety standards. We saw it when the President of the United States ordered the meatpacking plant in South Dakota to reopen. He said nothing about slowing the line down after hundreds of coronavirus diagnoses, as you, I think we all know. He said nothing about slowing the line down, which is the biggest problem with contaminants and worker safety and meatpacking plants. Nothing about slowing the line down, nothing about worker safety, nothing about worker protections, nothing about food safety, just said open the plant back up. And I think those two little scenarios, what Secretary of Labor acknowledged yesterday, the President's behavior about the slaughterhouses tells us everything. I'm particularly glad to join Rob and all of you to discuss the importance of workers in the latest attempt by Trump, by Mitch McConnell, by Senate Republicans to rob workers of their rights at a time when so many essential workers, we call them essential, they don't feel essential the way they're paid and the way we fail to protect them. But essential workers put their lives at risk every day by going to work, then return home, always anxious about infecting their family members. We shouldn't be surprised that Mitch McConnell and the Chamber of Commerce take advantage of this public health emergency to make it easier for corporations to mistreat workers and consumers and to never be held accountable. Of course, that's what they would do. That's always been their agenda. We know who makes this country work. It's people who punch a clock or swipe a badge or work for tips or work for salary. It's people who take care of our families and our elderly. The essential workers are mostly women. They're disproportionately black and brown workers. You'd think at a time that we're demanding more from these workers than ever before, they'd be getting a huge pay raise. We've proposed and the House has passed pandemic pay for these workers. No interest from Senator McConnell in doing that. Our government should be doing all it can to make sure these heroes are protected. But instead, we know McConnell's response. His corporate lobbyists, on behalf of his corporate lobbyist friends, he's trying to grant legal immunity to companies that fail to protect workers on the job. He said he feels no sense of urgency. You've heard that, his words, no urgency, when it comes to putting more money in people's pockets and helping communities in my state, in Ohio, and across the nation. He won't pass anything, he says, unless it gives corporations a blank check to abuse workers. McConnell has it backwards. Workers and consumers need protections from corporations, not the other way around. It's even more true during this pandemic when millions of Americans risk their health and safety to go to work. We've heard disturbing widespread reports of unsafe workplaces leading to preventable illnesses and deaths. The report Public Citizen releases today reinforces what we've been hearing. Again, we should be making it easier, not harder, to hold corporations accountable to keep their workers safe. Senator Warren and I introduced legislation that would protect workers' rights by extending the amount of time workers have to take action against companies that violate labor and employment laws. We know the pandemic will make it hard for people to take legal action against companies that break the law. It's already harder. Offices are closed. People are worried about how to get groceries, pay the rent, keep their families safe. They shouldn't lose their day in court because of all this. I've repeatedly pushed President Trump to issue what's called an emergency temporary standard to require companies to implement comprehensive plans to keep workers safe when they come to work, and would lead to federal enforcement when they don't do that. The president has refused another Trump betrayal of the workers he promised to look out for. So I've introduced a bill to force in the COVID-19 Every Worker Protection Act. The House passed it as part of their Heroes Act last month. McConnell needs to find the urgency to put it on the floor this week. Right now, we've seen a lot of corporations run feel-good ads saying thank you to essential workers. But workers don't need a PR campaign. They need better pay. They need protections. As one grocery store worker in Ohio said to me, you know, they call us essential, but more expendable because they don't pay us well and they don't protect us. They should be treated as essential workers, period. Thanks very much, Rob.
Thank you, Senator Brown. It's always uplifting to hear from you. And thank you for all the leadership you provide for people in Ohio and around the country. Those comments just underscore the cynicism of a call for business immunity at the exact same time when the federal government is refusing to provide clear standards, either new regulatory standards from OSHA or guidance that's clear and specific from the CDC or from OSHA or for other agencies. It makes very crystal clear that this is not about protecting health and not about figuring out how to help businesses do the right thing. It's about enabling businesses to do the wrong thing, to not take proper precautions. And unfortunately, we're seeing that happen in too many workplaces, in too many nursing homes, and potentially in too many retail spaces across the country. And with that, I'd like to transition to Rick Claypool, research director at Public Citizen, who will give us an overview of our new report today on how companies are not engaging in responsible conduct during the coronavirus period. Rick?
Thanks, Rob. So the new report we released today, Corporate Accountability, the Next Coronavirus Casualty, shows what we've been talking about is that we found too many companies are exposing workers and consumers to unreasonable coronavirus risks. Not what we would want to see in terms of these if they expect immunity. We're talking about grocery stores, warehouses, meatpacking plants, and nursing homes, which have all been particularly susceptible. Now, these are all workplaces where the workers are disproportionately people of color who are often paid low wages and who receive scant benefits. In many of these workplaces, we see that if any kind of sick leave is provided, it comes with many conditions and restrictions and is often unpaid. Many workplaces provided sick leave sort of only in the instance of a positive coronavirus test, which when they were being rationed, in particular in the early weeks and months of the pandemic, was absolutely unreasonable and just a an invitation for people who were sick and couldn't get a test to come to work, putting people in an impossible position. So the specific companies that we found acting most unreasonably included Life Care Centers of America, a nursing home network where federal health inspectors identified safety protocol breakdowns prior to the pandemic at several of the nursing homes facilities and at least 10 facilities during the outbreak. At least 250 residents of these life care centers have died, and at least 2,000 coronavirus cases were reported. We have Tyson Foods, where the meat packing plants were particularly problematic here, where they denied workers fully paid sick leave and, according to worker complaints, failed to implement social distancing and provide adequate PPE. At Tyson, at least 18 employees died and more than 4,500 tested positive for COVID-19. Smithfield Foods infamously became the single largest source of coronavirus cases in mid-April as workers accused the company of ignoring early warning signs and failing to provide sufficient PPE. As a result of those Smithfield outbreak, at least two people died and more than 1,000 got sick. and then companies that people were relying on to provide their consumer goods. At Walmart, workers were saying they lacked necessary PPE cleaning supplies, and at least 18 Walmart employees have died. And Amazon, the warehouses also were particularly problematic. Workers say they were denied paid sick leave, and there were insufficient protections across Amazon's warehouses. At least 6 employees have died, and there's a tracker that estimates that at least 900 employees have gotten sick. So, it just shows. If these are the circumstances of how companies are going to be acting, when people can hold them accountable for neglecting their consumers and workers, immunizing them is just an invitation for even more wrongdoing. So it's just certain that that's going to happen, and so we're going to try to make sure that that doesn't happen.
Great. Thanks so much, Rick. For any of you, if you haven't seen the report, you can go to our homepage at citizen.org, scroll down to the news section, and get a link right there. Next, we're going to hear from Remington Gregg, who will, with some assistance from me, talk briefly about some of the policy issues that are being raised by the immunity effort by big business, and then we'll have an opportunity for a couple questions before we close the call. Remington, go ahead.
Thanks, Rob. The chamber has been pushing a few arguments that really don't bear up when you kind of scratch under the surface. So one is, for example, is that the chamber is asking for safe harbor for businesses that follow safety standards. So let's be very clear that big business's idea of a narrow immunity proposal, which they're calling this, would exempt an untold number of industries from the laws of all 50 states. These are laws that provide people a way to hold corporations accountable, and so it would be a sweeping federal overreach. That would lead to more illness for workers and consumers and more preventable deaths in nursing homes. Just this week, we've seen that 40% of all deaths related to coronavirus are in nursing homes. And we need to have to ensure that these businesses are held accountable if they don't take proper safety precautions. And also, as Rob mentioned, a lot of the U.S. Departments of Labor and Agriculture have cut back on enforcement, and the Trump administration is refusing to put in place science-based enforceable standards. And so shielding companies from liability, for example, just complying with government informal guidance, which is what they are seeking, isn't binding on companies and doesn't have the force of law and would discourage businesses from adopting potentially additional safety standards for situations where they reasonably could do so. And then, of course, they are talking about how this would be a safe harbor that's limited, but Mitch McConnell has said that he wants to shield businesses for 5 years, going back to December 2019, all the way to 2025. This is not contrary to what they're trying to push. This is not a temporary and limited safe harbor. This is a sweeping proposal that would paper over the laws of all 50 states. Rob, do you have anything else to add on that?
You can go ahead. You're doing great.
Yeah. And then the one final thing, because Rob already – I will add that just to piggyback what Rob was saying about the economy and just add that Jerome Powell had already said that the economy won't recover until consumers are confident that they can return to businesses and to other stores. This would have the opposite effect. If people are not confident that businesses are doing the right thing to keep them safe, they will not come back. So this would do the exact opposite of helping to get our economy back on track. And the final thing is this idea of the chamber is worried about the flood of litigation. And this is something that they say a lot, so you have to take it with a grain of salt. But don't just take it with a grain of salt. Look at the data. Most of the small number of COVID-related lawsuits that we've seen already are for price gouging and for businesses that are selling sham treatments, as well as small businesses suing insurance companies over the denial of coverage for business interruption claims. So this would, and then also civil rights claims, for example, individuals in prison seeking adequate protections to keep them safe. So what we're seeing are meritorious claims related to price gouging and small business claims and civil rights claims. We're not seeing the types of claims that the chamber says is coming, because it isn't coming, and the data backs that up.
Great, thank you, Remington. And you know, I think on that last point, it's worth underscoring, as you said, this is both a perpetual claim of the Chamber of Commerce, and it's perpetually not reflected in the actual data. As regards coronavirus litigation, there are a lot of barriers to filing claims in the first case and also bringing effective and winning cases, notwithstanding underlying merits. As regards employment and consumer claims, a lot of them are going to be precluded by forced arbitration provisions that will prevent people from either bringing cases in court or joining together in class actions, because they're bound by these contract terms that strip away their rights. If they are able to bring cases forward in court, they're going to have challenging issues of proof, because anyone could be exposed to coronavirus through outside of the workplace or outside of an exposure at a retailer, for example. If there are workers trying to bring cases, they're going to run into obstacles with workers' compensation that funnel claims against employers for workplace injuries and illness into the workers' comp system and out of the civil justice system. So there are a lot of barriers to bringing these cases, and as Remington says, there's no evidence that they're now occurring in significant numbers, notwithstanding the significant evidence of a lot of corporate wrongdoing. However, the fact that the cases may be brought does have an important deterrent effect on corporate wrongdoing. If we got the kind of immunity, if we were forced to be subjected to the kind of immunity that Mitch McConnell is proposing, that the Chamber of Commerce is proposing, we would lose that deterrent effect, and it is a certainty that we would have more corporate irresponsibility, more exposures to the virus, more preventable unnecessary sickness, and more preventable unnecessary sickness and death. We know you're all busy, but we have a couple minutes for questions if there are any. Operator, can you please cue the questions if there are any?
If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. That's star and the number 1. We have a question from the line of Mark Gruenberg with Press Associates.
Good morning or good afternoon. First of all, I should let you know that the first suit that the chamber is scared of was filed in the Eastern District of New York the day before yesterday by UNI, the Global Union, and the RWDSU against Amazon. They're joining 6 workers saying basically Amazon isn't protecting them. Second, and this is for anyone who wants to answer it, I know Senator Brown had to get off the call. How do you plan to get past the Mitch McConnell blockade, in so many words?
Remington, you want to take a crack at that?
I think one important piece to this is making it clear that Mitch McConnell shouldn't be playing games at a moment when people around this country are suffering. We need to ensure that first responders, our firefighters and our teachers are being paid. A lot of state and local governments are feeling the the pinch. And we also have to ensure that we can have more funding for people who are still laid off. And so we need to be discussing these critical issues that are impacting our country and will prevent us from going into a Great Depression. And so what we plan to do and will continue to do with our allies of more than 140 organizations is to push forward to talk about the necessary, what we need to do to protect people in this really dangerous time, and the things that Congress needs to do and push them to actually take action on those issues instead of dealing with this kind of this frivolous wish list item.
Okay.
And I do think that as the time goes by, you know, as more time passes, and as more vulnerable members of Congress, potentially vulnerable Republican senators, are going back to their state and hearing from their constituents that they want action, I think that that pressure as well will force McConnell to take action and then take action without this this dangerous proposal.
Yeah, I mean, just to quickly add on, I mean, I think,
right,
you know, everyone knows that sort of Senator McConnell is a master of manipulating the legislative process. But in fact, in this situation, he has much less leverage than is normally the case, because every member of Congress and the President of the United States is going to be under increasing pressure to deliver the various kinds of aid, whether it's extension of unemployment benefits, aid to the states, addressing health care needs of the newly unemployed, helping manage homelessness or the prison population, or on and on and on. They're all going to be increasingly feeling, not to mention the actual underlying health issues, they're all going to be increasingly feeling that pressure. And it's going to be, I think, very difficult for McConnell to hold up that package, which is going to move forward to provide at least some version of that aid we'd expect, you know, by the end of July, on the grounds of providing a special favor to big business that does not seem, because it is in fact not, connected to any of the actual needs in the economy and in the society.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Laura Litvin with Bloomberg News.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
You're great.
Thanks for having this call. I am in the Capitol this week, and I actually had a chance to see John Cornyn yesterday, and I asked him a little bit about how they might approach this. And I want to hear your reaction, Mr. Weissman, to one thing that he told me. He said that when they, a company could qualify for the liability shield using some kind of guidelines from a government entity, but they would give them some, the company, a latitude as to which guidelines it would use. He said that he felt that there are too many conflicting things out there, and you could select CDC guidelines or perhaps another federal agency or a mayor's directive or something from a state government. And he said that they at this time, you know, that's what they're looking at doing, is something that would give some latitude to the employer to select something. I wanted to just hear what you had to say to that.
I hadn't heard that before. I do think it's worthy of the chuckle. You know, so to be clear, what the idea there is, A, because the federal government has been so utterly inept in giving clear guidance to employers and businesses, they can't, those entities can't be held accountable for adhering to federal guidance. But beyond that, of course, is the idea that an employer or a retailer or a nursing home should be able to pick and choose the standards that it prefers to adhere to. Well, undermines the very idea that there are standards in the first place. And if there's any logic to the idea of a safe harbor, which is, you know, as Remington said, and we can detail further, we don't think there is. But if there is any logic to it, it's because you're actually adhering to some clearly specified, rigorous standard of good conduct. And if you're able to just pick and choose what's the weakest one or the easiest one for you to accommodate, well, you've blown apart the very underlying theory that justified the safe harbor in the first place. So we would say that is not a good idea. I'm a little shocked just to hear that that's the notion, that the employer or the business gets to choose the standard to which they want to adhere. That hardly makes it a standard. Just to be very clear, even if you had rigorous standards, which we don't, the idea of immunity for adhering to those standards is misguided. It's in almost every state, probably in every state, that you are adhering to clear governmental standards is a defense in a case, but it's not a sufficient defense, it's a powerful defense, but there's the ability of the plaintiff has the ability to make an argument that for one reason or another that was still not reasonable, and it gives the ability to look at particular circumstances, including whether or not the underlying standard actually is sufficiently protective of the class of which the plaintiff is a part. So the idea of safe harbor, an automatic safe harbor, we think is a mistake, even when you have strong standards in place. When you don't have strong standards in place, it becomes a much, much worse idea. Senator Cornyn suggesting an even worse variant of that. But if you look at the CDC guidelines, it's not even clear what the CDC guidelines are because they were suppressed and then sort of unsuppressed under pressure by the White House. But in any case, they are, to say they're not enforceable sort of understates the case. They're guidelines in the form of sort of general recommendations about things that an enterprise should try to do. Well, that means as you can choose not to do those things as an employer or a retailer, and you're not particularly out of compliance with them from a legal standpoint. If you were trying to apply those guidelines as having legal force, being out of not doing the recommendation, since it's only a recommendation, it does not make you out of compliance. And so it's sort of that the safe harbor in that context becomes, it's a really big harbor with not much safety for the public. But Senator Cornyn's idea, I think, is give him high grades for creativity, but I think failing grades for good public policy. And I think no chance of that kind of proposal moving forward.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Joyce Frieden with MedPage Today.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my question. First, just a reminder to please, please identify yourself when you speak. I have trouble going between, knowing who's talking between Remington and Rob. Also, I was wondering, how does the safe harbor thing interact with reasons that employees, I assume, can already sue if their workplace is a danger to their health and safety? Are there laws in place that this would all override?
Remington, you want to take a first shot at it?
Sure. This is Remington. So this would, as Rob was noting, it's very difficult already to sue because of forced arbitration clauses and workers' comp, which basically says in almost every state, if you're injured, you go through that and you cannot sue. And to the extent you can sue, there's really no federal tort law. It's through the state. So if you wanted to sue a business, for example, for failing to take reasonable precautions, you'd have to do that under state law, meaning that any proposal on the federal level that McConnell and Corbyn are proposing would paper over the laws of all 50 states. And that is in and of itself shocking when you consider that a lot of Republicans are the party of states' rights. And in fact, not everyone in the Republican Party caucus, in the Senate at least, is comfortable with this proposal. And they made that pretty clear in the Senate hearing related to business immunity. So those like Senator Mike Lee and Senator Josh Hawley, who believe strongly in the 10th Amendment, expressed concern over the federal government preempting state laws in this context. So that's where we stand, the papering over the laws of all 50 states.
So this is Robert Weissman. So that's exactly right. And just to reiterate the point, we're talking about whether workers or consumers have the ability to bring cases generally under state law. And although there are obstacles, there are also some opportunities. And the short answer to your question is yes, this proposal for immunity, again, we haven't seen it, but the general idea of immunity would override the rights to bring those cases forward under whatever kind of claim was being sought. It is possible, so we're talking primarily about state law when it comes to negligence cases for injuries at the workplace, in nursing homes, or retailers. But it is entirely possible, maybe even likely, that when we finally see the immunity legislative proposal, it will cover things besides negligence cases and besides injuries and illnesses. So, for example, it could easily cover civil rights claims, and it might therefore also invoke a whole host of federal law as well. But the short answer is yes. The idea is to override all these various laws that give people the right to sue corporations for wrongdoing and say they get a free pass because coronavirus. Operators, anybody else?
There are no other questions in queue at this time.
Well, thank you all for joining us. We appreciate your time. If you have any follow-up information, please reach out to us. Check out our comms office at citizen.org and first point of contact, Remington Gregg, rgregg, at citizen.org. Thank you all, and we will be in touch with you. Take care. Bye.
That concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.